sunshine, little Uber, liver, liver. Oh, good evening. Welcome to As the Worm Turns. It is KVNF's gardening show. I am your host, Jill. I'm here with our regular worms, Lulu, Lance. Good evening.
Good evening.
Hello, everybody.
We've got a special guest in the house tonight. It is Frank Stoniker from Osito Orchards up on Rogers Mesa, and we're going to get right to a discussion with him. But this is a call-in show. We love our listeners. We love our callers.
Don't wait till the last minute.
Yeah, we got a lot of good stuff going on, so you want to get your call in. 527-486-8166 KVNF now. And we have some savvy listeners that like that email thing.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's so cool.
I love it because it just pops up, and Steve and Janice sent an email. Remember last week we were talking about Tara had squash bugs, and she just wanted to push them off the plant real gently and let them lay on the ground. Frank's thinking, not a good idea.
Much more entertaining things to do.
Right. Too soft, Tara, because Steve and Janice say that Janice saw that when the eggs hatch, these things look like little spiders that are really creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And her husband had never seen them. So next time she found eggs, she cut off the leaf and put it in a jar. And she was just ready to throw it out, and they hatched.
Yep.
Yep, into those ugly little spider things.
Yeah, and they look like a little cloud at the bottom of the plant.
Ooh.
When they first hatch, they like are all just like
all
a cloud.
Together. Yeah.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Little like, gray fellas with black legs.
Yeah.
Right.
Gray.
Right.
Yeah, they're like gray, and it's weird. It's scary.
Creepy. Yeah. Yeah. So I think Steve and Janice are saying, don't be so gentle, Tara. Go with one of Frank's remedies.
No, like, man. You can't be too generous to stink bugs or to squash bugs.
Okay.
That stink.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that stink.
They stink.
All right. So take care of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw one yesterday, a juvenile.
Yeah. Oh, you
it
did?
Didn't last long.
It didn't last long.
It was just one, though.
That makes me nervous,
but
time.
There could be more.
An army of one.
Yeah.
Right.
This time of year, squash bugs hang out on the winter squash. And
okay.
So that's what I'm looking for. When I'm going through the squash patch, that's what I'm looking for.
Oh, my God. I couldn't possibly go through my squash patch. I'd get eaten alive.
Your squash patch is, like, awesome and climbing and
it's
happy.
Yeah. I mean, you really have to put on your combat clothes to go in there. It's scary. And the goal was to get the spaghetti squash to grow on the fence that goes around the old hot tub that's the cistern for the irrigation water. Jesus, God. There's like spaghetti squash the size of a basketball hanging off there. It's pretty cool.
Right on.
So,
it sounds fun. It sounds like what's going on up at Frank's Orchard, Osito Orchards up on Rogers Mesa. Frank, you have been up there about 3 years, or you're on your third crop, right?
Yeah, we're on our third crop.
Okay.
We moved over here from the Front Range after trying to move over here for a really long time.
Right.
And finally found a lovely spot.
So wonderful.
Happy to be there.
And you've got quite a orchard up there. You've got a lot of trees.
We have about, I think, around 9,000 trees.
And hello.
That just blows my mind.
Yeah.
We know them all
fabulous.
Really well. All named, of course.
No. Yeah. And so they're in different, you call them blocks.
Mm-hmm.
That's typical orchard naming type of
thing.
I
think that's lingo for orcharding.
And it's block one, two, three?
Or? No, we call it by the variety. So
the variety.
We have
okay.
The Honeycrisp block and the Ginger Gold block and the so on.
So you've got like how many varieties of apples up there?
So we have 12 apple varieties, and those come off at different times during the season, sort of sequentially. Some of them are real early, like the Ginger Golds, which we had none of this year.
Oh, no.
We had a few, but the birds always eat them anyway. They're really sweet.
Was that a freeze issue, or what was the deal with no harvest there?
Yeah, it was that tax day freeze.
Yeah.
April 15th.
What's that really tax day?
That,
I didn't realize that.
Right?
Oh, yeah.
Good thing I filed an extension.
Yeah, right?
I wish we had thought of that beforehand.
Oh, man.
Oh, so that hit those.
That hit pretty much the whole county.
Block of apples, yeah.
Yeah, so I think throughout the North Fork, there were probably no cherries. There are a few undercover that I think survived. And then some of the peaches, some peach varieties did relatively well. Most of the apples did really lousy. We have some Honeycrisp and some Goldens that have a few apples on them, but otherwise it's pretty grim out there.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty hit and miss, right?
Man, that sounds devastating. What do you do in a year like that when you're...
Well, you take care of the trees anyway. You still have to prune them. And even the trees that did have some fruit, the fruit may be concentrated on a certain limb. So you have to thin those, even though they're of a very light crop. You need to thin them down to a density that they'll actually grow into a sizable apple.
Yeah, so they kind of need a little TLC because of the whole thing. I mean, I would want to baby those trees. Poor things didn't flourish.
That's just your nature. You can't help it. You're just that kind of girl.
Well, thanks, Lulu. But you've got a family operation going up there, pretty much. You and a couple other people, and you take care of all those trees up there.
Yeah, Beth Carberg is my partner in crime, and she and I are around most of the year, and then we have some kids that drop in from time to time and help us out. And then Javier is our main guy. He's there all year, does most of the pruning, does a lot of the thinning, and a lot of the really heavy work is on his shoulders. And we have a community of people that have worked in the orchards here for years and years and years that help us out during the peak labor needs.
Right. Great.
And they're really highly qualified, expert workers that we couldn't possibly do anything without.
Yeah, right.
Well, hats off to all the people that harvest the fruit and vegetables.
Absolutely.
And what's the elevation up there?
We're right at 6,000 at the top of our property. So we're one of the higher peach growers around here.
Right.
And we're a little bit cooler. So some of our neighbors right down the street, the Elos and Tegroton houses, they're same varieties, but maybe they're a week ahead of us on some of those.
Wow.
A quarter of a mile away, and it's the microclimate effect is really interesting.
Yeah, because you're close to Lance, who's on LaRue Creek Road, which is sort of up or off of Rogers
I'm at 61
Mesa.
Or a little bit more.
Yeah, and if you aren't from the North Fork, Rogers Mesa is right before you come into Hotchkiss. Would that be a good description?
Yeah, if you're going east.
Yeah, and we've talked about Pat Frazier, who farms up there. Yeah. Just the difference in temperatures from your farm to Pat's. And you guys are really
even
close.
This morning she stopped by, and she was 10 degrees colder than me this morning.
Wow.
From Redlands Mesa.
Wow.
Microclimate, yeah.
Yeah, a mile away.
Yeah.
But fruit seems to like it. I like this high elevation fruit. I grew up on the Front Range myself and never realized how much fruit. I always knew it came from Grand Junction, but I never realized the history of growing fruit from Montrose on up through the North Fork. So
yeah,
it's pretty amazing. Do you think that being a little higher, and you also have great, you face so nicely south pretty much, don't you?
Southeast, yeah.
Yeah, southeast.
Sort of in that
Being a little higher, does that save you sometimes, too, from the frost that just really whack the valley floor?
Sure, the valley.
Yeah, we have really well-drained, air-drained fields.
You have Lure Creek going down the canyon, right?
Right.
And all the cold air is going off.
There's a lot of stuff that pulls you down there.
Yeah.
But on these really frosty inversion nights when things are dangerous, the temperatures around the orchard are really confounding because you're up all night checking temperatures and seeing that, well, down in this block it's 26 and up here it's 28. And, oh, no, the neighbor turned on the fan. And what does that mean? Should I have my machines running? And then...
Oh, my gosh.
And then after a while it's a war zone. All the machines are running and all the... It sounds like a bunch of helicopters are buzzing around.
I can hear that from my house.
Oh, can you? Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's. Yeah,
we're
really
in
terrible.
Town and we can hear it.
Really?
Yeah.
I must not be listening hard enough.
It's up on.
I'm listening to the crickets too hard or something.
No, well, not
up
in
on,
March.
Up on Lamborn and back up in there, I think we hear something for sure. You can hear.
Right.
Or maybe it's the ones down on Matthews Lane and down there. I don't know.
Everybody's using fans these days, and I guess we have to just because of the shift of temperatures. Yeah. Or,
but you're going to do something neat with your cherries.
Yeah.
Are you going to use Christmas tree lights?
That's a good idea.
That's what I do.
That's what Lulu does to keep the heat on the plant.
It works like a charm.
We'll have to get a lot of batteries out there.
A lot of extension cords.
9,000 trees. How beautiful. You could see that from the space station or something.
Yeah, right?
Like that.
It'd be pretty cool, right?
Right.
Hey, wait a second.
And he's going to put them in row covers.
We're going to put high tunnels.
High tunnels.
So these cherries will not get to grow very tall, only about 9 feet.
Okay.
And they're planted really tight together in high-density plantings, and they're supported on trellises, kind of like grapes would be.
Wow.
And then we'll cover them with high tunnels to hopefully mitigate some of that frost potential.
Wow, that sounds like a big project.
Yeah, it's a big project. We're hoping to get started this fall and hopefully have covers on by the spring, and we'll see what the spring holds for us.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But you're still going to let them get the cold during the winter.
Yeah, so we'll leave them open and until there's a danger of a bad freeze, and then we'll pull the plastic down. And we could potentially heat in underneath those covers as well.
But wow. Yeah.
Probably not go that far.
That's fascinating. I think you're going to have cherries next year.
That is fascinating.
So hope.
Yeah. What kind of cherries are they?
They're sweet cherries. So we have Bings and Lapins and Black Golds and Skeenas and Rainiers. And
Wow. Awesome.
We're coming up. I had a cherry a couple of years ago when the crops came in really well, a lot, you know, and Lindsay and I were picking cherries, and I won't say any more than that about it. But these cherries were so good. Oh, my God. They weren't a Bing.
What were they?
I don't know. That's the thing. That's why I have to go up to a cedar and try each one until I find the one, and then I'll know.
Yeah.
Nice.
Because they had a different flavor. They were like exactly like you would expect a cherry to taste. I mean, and just a lot of flavor. To me, Bings sometimes, you know, it's kind of like eating a red delicious apple. You're kind of over it. You know?
Right. Kind of used to it.
Yeah.
You want something new and exciting.
You want something new and exciting. Mm-hmm. Your little taste buds are all worked up.
Right. And that is fabulous to like be tasting several different kinds of tomatoes, which we've got here.
The Sun Golds. This is that's God's own right there.
They're gorgeous. Those little small cherry tomato size.
Yeah.
Gorgeous.
And you just pop them in your mouth and they just are fabulous. And then if you dry them, you just cut them in half and dry them on a, you know, whatever. Uh-huh. And they're like little candies. Oh. And I want to make some
like
sort
jawbreakers.
Oh, man. No, they're not
nice.
That hard, but they're fabulous. But what I want to do is make some sort of a olive oil and dried Sun Gold. Pesto somehow.
Yes.
You
that
know,
would be fabulous.
Then figure out if I can freeze it or how
well,
I'm
going to
keep
it. Well, soak your dried tomatoes in the olive oil and then make your pesto.
Oh. Ooh. I just like the color factor.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too.
Fabulous.
For me, it's soak them in the olive oil.
Hey, we've got a caller on the line. It is Amber from Paonia. Hi, Amber.
Hello there.
Hi.
Good evening. What's going on?
Good evening. Enjoying the show. Thank you so much for doing this. I have a question about cherry trees. You were talking about cherries, and I get these little slimy guys like on the leaves of my cherry tree.
Oh, man.
And they kind of skeletonize early in the season, and now they just kind of are, maybe they have a mold or something on them. They look terrible this year. Any thoughts about what this could be?
Well, those are sawflies.
The larva
of the sawfly. Yeah. And they do have a couple generations in a year. So you'll have an early one, and then they kind of disappear. And I don't know what predators are working on them, but they kind of disappear if you ignore them. And then this late season, we've just been hammered on our new trees by them. And they're really defoliating the trees seriously to a point where I'm actually doing some management on them because
what are
they
you
are
doing?
Trees. Well, within the organic realm, and we're certified organic. We've just transitioned the orchard to organic, and there's a material called spinosad or entrust that is it's a fermented bacterium that you can spray, and it is pretty effective. on those. And I don't know if diatomaceous earth might work on them, or
I've used neem, and I've used pyrethrum.
Mm-hmm.
And they're usually on the top of the leaves, so I get up on my ladder and spray down.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And I also read last year, it's also called pear slug or cherry slug.
Right.
And oh, yeah. Last year, if you cultivate around the plant the first half inch, that's where they winter over. And if you cultivate a couple times, the birds will eat them.
Oh, there you go.
So you got to do that, start doing that, because that's where they're living during the winter time. That's what it said in one of my garden books.
So if you have some chickens in your orchard, yep, they'd probably take care of it.
Take care of it, yeah.
Pretty easy. Great.
And that spinosad, you can get that at the Pena Farm and Haunt, the organic thing, and it's the Monterey insect spray. Has spinosad in it. Mm-hmm. Am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah, spinosad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So you can. It's actually available locally, mm-hmm. and it's. I just sprayed it this morning. It's 2 tablespoons to the 1/2 gallon.
All right.
All right. All my Perfect. Questions are answered.
Great call, Amber.
Great. All right.
That material you do want to spray late in the afternoon or in the evening because it is really hard on bees. So,
Good to know.
Keep it away from the bees.
All right. I think Amber has the whole bee thing going there. She's got a great garden and yard here in Paonia. All aspects of it going on. So, yeah.
Awesome. Oh, yeah. That's you, Amber? Oh, yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Hi, honey.
Hi. I'm your neighbor.
Yeah. I get it. Right. I got it now. Duh.
All right. Great.
Always learning. Well, thank you so much.
Thanks, Amber.
Bye-bye.
So I have a question about the cultivating. Uh-huh. Do you cultivate around the hole all the way out to like the drip line or whatever?
Because
they've fallen off the leaves.
They've fallen off the tree and they'll climb down.
Yeah.
Another way to slow it down would be to put that tanglefoot on the trunk and then they can't climb down.
What's tanglefoot?
It's really sticky, yucky stuff.
Amazing.
And generally it's applied to keep ants and stuff from climbing up the tree.
Gotcha.
But it also works because I had it on and it kept the codling moss and those kind of things
from getting
down into the ground.
Uh-huh.
So it actually worked both ways.
Yeah, super sticky like bug catcher.
When I say codling moss, I mean the worm.
Mm-hmm.
The worm that
we're talking about. Yeah.
So the codling moth worm comes down off the tree.
Yeah, because it comes out of the apple if it matures there.
Right.
And if you haven't sprayed enough, you got them. And they actually came down the tree and
it
got stuck. Yeah.
What'd you spray this morning with the spinosad?
It was the Monterey Bay. Oh, it's good for leaf miners.
Oh,
and
okay.
The fall crop of spinach and beets and Swiss chard.
Okay.
You know, that's interesting. Like, by this time of year, I don't have leaf miners. They're out of there.
Yeah.
They're done.
Yeah, well, they invaded for the first time. They spent their summer in the sorrel, the French sorrel.
Yeah, You got to get it. They love that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to get them out of there. You pick all the leaves and feed them to the chickens. The chickens go wild.
I put it in the compost.
Yeah.
Since I don't have chickens.
Right. There you go.
Yeah.
There's a couple of really effective parasitoids that impact serpentine leaf miner too. And usually, I know this isn't always true, but usually in organic systems, you don't have much pressure because you're not killing off those parasitoids.
Oh, okay.
So there's two that come in on their own, generally, and they're usually a little bit later in the season to really before they get rolling. And then when it cools off again and they don't operate as quickly, they don't have their generations as quickly, then the leaf miners can pick back up.
Okay.
Just like those cabbage aphids and stuff like that.
Right.
That outrun the
beneficial. Oh, yeah. Right. The aphids that come so late in the year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
Interesting. Now, Frank, you mentioned that you've transitioned to an organic orchard, certified organic.
Right.
And how did that all happen? The orchard is an old orchard, right?
It is. It's the Whites homesteaded there, I think, over 100 years ago and put in trees and had a lot of trees up on Rogers Mesa. And the parcel that we have was one of their parcels. And I was very interested in transitioning it to organic production. And really, there are some big issues in soil fertility that you have to consider in terms of trees that have been on sort of a quick nitrogen diet, and right. all the micronutrients, of course, are applied foliarly, which we do organically as well. But the nitrogen cycles in organic systems in the soil are really slow. And in the spring, when the soils are cold, the microbes aren't active. You have all this organic matter there that's just waiting to warm up and get active and,
right.
and be mobilized into food for the plants. But so that's a big challenge for organic growers. And then the pest management end, even though I'm trained as an entomologist in biocontrol, there are lots of things that I'm pretty clueless about in tree crops. And we have... Organic growers have really good tools to use across the board. Some of them are really effective. We have really good coddling moth control, which is amazing because it's such a tenacious pest. Some of the diseases are really tough, whether you're organic or not.
Right.
And peaches especially.
As an organic whole, there's been some solutions that have come out for organic farmers that pretty much everybody uses that have come out of the whole push to be more organic?
Yeah.
I mean...
I think, yeah, organic growers in vegetable crops as well as grain crops and fruit crops have been real pioneers in a lot of really effective pest management solutions out of necessity and out of creativity and
out of
new thought. I think a lot of organic growers come from places that aren't farms and they don't have a mindset to fulfill. They have new ideas and crazy ideas, and some of them really work well.
Right, and we were talking before the show just about that. We talk about that in gardening, to just try things, and you're amazed at what works, and you do the same in your orchard.
That's right. There are lots of things that work. There are plenty more things that go wrong.
Right. That's what keeps you on your toes, right?
But you always get something. I mean, if you're diverse, you're always going to get something. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you just, you know, if you do something good, bad, or whatever, you know,
you're going to learn from it.
You're going to pick up. If you make the same mistake all the time, well, then you're just an idiot. Maybe you should, you know, take up golf or something.
Right.
I don't know. But if you keep trying different stuff, you know, it's all good.
Now, you were growing some vegetables in with the fruit trees. Were they young trees?
Yeah, we had some space between our trees. And since we had such a light crop this year, I was scrambling to make some money and help pay for things. So we planted some root crops mainly because they're fast and easy. And so radishes and beets. And then we did some broccoli.
Frank gave me a black radish.
Oh.
He sent a black radish down. We bought some peaches. Phil bought them, right? He paid for them.
Oh, yeah, he paid.
Cool. Anyway, those black radishes were amazing. Okay, they're big. They're like the size of...
of a billiard ball.
Yeah,
oh, my goodness. I've never seen such a thing.
Billiard tennis somewhere.
What were they called?
These are Nero Tondos.
Okay, Japanese.
Wow.
Actually... I think it's a Spanish.
Oh, okay.
I have no idea where they came up with that. Maybe a Japanese Spaniard.
Well, I grow the late round black Spanish.
Okay.
But it gets huge.
Wow. Never seen a radish that big.
I'm telling you. And they were so fabulous.
Yeah.
Because they were so radishy tasting and spicy, but not over the top. They just had this fabulous flavor.
And you got that up from Frank at Aceto. Mm-hmm. Nice.
They were awesome.
Tara is on the line. Hi, Tara.
Hi, Tara.
Hello. Am I on?
You are on. Thanks for waiting.
You brought up the foliar feeding again, and I've had this question after Lance said that he makes his compost tea on Friday and applies it on Monday. And I wonder, do you try to avoid, like, right before a rainstorm? I mean, when do you do it? Early in the morning, late at night? Does it matter when you do the foliar feeding?
Well, if I'm correct, the stomata cells on the leaves, on the underside of the leaves, are only open when it's cool.
Oh, okay.
So I do it first thing in the morning.
Uh-huh.
That's just what works for me.
And you try to spray it kind of under in particular?
I don't make that much of an effort.
Yeah.
The only stuff that I do try to get it under is the grapes, because they're all just a big, yeah. On the trellis, there's just a big wall on the top of the leaves. So I get those on the other side.
Uh-huh. But everything else you just can just do.
Yeah, just spray it around.
So when it's cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
All right, Tara. Yeah. Thanks for the call.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got grapes up there, Frank, as well.
We've got some table grapes.
Table grapes. Mm-hmm.
And we're...
I love this story. He goes, oh, yeah, we've got a few table grapes.
Yeah, we don't have...
I don't have a lot.
Right, but you've got... Yeah, you've got a lot of grapes.
We have more than we can eat.
And we're
glad to share them with the community. So
nice.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Do you know what kind?
Yeah,
what varieties?
We have Reliance.
Uh-huh. That's a good one.
And Mars.
Uh-huh.
And Canadice.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard Canadice. Mm-hmm. Canadice, they're these lovely little, I'd like to think of them as little champagne bubbles. They're kind of a pinkish color.
Ooh.
Very
Ooh.
Beautiful
really
clusters.
Nice.
Uh-huh. Very tight, yeah.
They're really sweet.
Yeah.
The Mars are kind of a Concordish flavor, but they're seedless, and they're not quite as Concord as a Concord. And the Reliance is a nice sort of a flame type grape.
Right.
They're so good.
Is that what you have going in your ultimate grapevine setting right now?
Yeah, in the ultimate grapevine setting with two vines. One is a Concord that's 90 plus probably years old.
Mm.
And the other is the tiny Reliance that's only about 8 years old. And the Reliance are the bomb.
Yeah.
Nice. God, they are good.
They're so good.
And they grow and grow and grow.
And grow and grow and grow.
They're really big.
If you're into grapevine baskets
and that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Uh-huh.
Those guys can grow 15 feet.
Yeah.
Nice.
And if anybody is into that, call me.
Yeah.
I can hook it up for you. Yeah.
So what do you take a fresh vine to?
No, we're just talking about basket weaving.
Basket weaving in the spring when you pull everything off.
Right.
Yeah, it's great. You get miles and miles of stuff.
Sounds good.
Oh, you were saying also one last thing here. You were mentioning that on the pruning, you were like shredding them in the orchard. What was that machine you had?
Oh, so we have a flail motor that we put behind our tractor, and it's like a bunch of giant, it's a row of like 16-ounce hammers, basically, and they spin around on a cylinder really fast, and they just shred all kinds of wood and all the prunings just get chopped up into little pieces. And
right in the orchard.
Nice. And it
turns into soil really amazingly quickly. In about a year, all those prunings are gone.
Because normally in the past, they've hauled that stuff all out there, put it in a big pile and burn it.
Right.
Yeah.
And now it's just right going.
And now it's going back into the ground.
Oh, I love that.
I love that.
That's great.
We do take our sick trees and prune those early, and we pick up that pruning and we take it out and burn
okay.
it. But, but all the healthy stuff we try to make soil out of.
I love
awesome.
It.
Nice.
Hey, can we, as the public, visit you up at Ocito Orchards?
Yeah, they can go and buy stuff.
Uh-huh. How do we get up there? Where are we? We're up on Rogers Mesa.
Yeah, so 3100 Road is LaRue Creek Road.
Okay.
And we're in a mile and a half north of the highway.
Okay.
And we're on the east side, and we've got a little sign that says Ocito Orchard.
All right.
And we're open from 2 to 6 right now, selling peaches, and hopefully we'll have some grapes and a handful of apples here before too long.
Great. Some beautiful peaches. Frank, thanks for bringing those in. They're fabulous looking. Organic. Yeah. And some baby melons here, too. Thanks, Lance. So cute.
So it's 2 to 4?
2 to 6.
2 to 6. Every day.
All the time, yeah. If the gate's closed, then we're probably asleep.
But
Marika is taking care of our customers.
Perfect.
All right.
Uh-huh. Perfect.
All right,
we
folks.
Love that.
Yeah. And thanks, Frank, for coming in. Great
thanks
to
so much.
Learn a little bit about what's
you.
Going on up there.
How fun is that?
Yeah. Lance, Lulu, see you next week, Worms.
Peace out.
Peace out. Hey, it's Leah coming up with One Woman's Perspective.
One woman's going to be in there doing it. All right.
All by herself. Yep. Thanks for listening to KVNF.
Good night, everybody.
Equipped with taillight and neon, you've got a cute vest pocket master, which you can make both slow and faster. I don't know who you took a shine to, or who you
you're apt to make a sign to. I got a gal that I love so, though little